Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Before I introduce our speaker, it's our practice to go around the room and say our name. I'll go ahead and begin. My name is Roy.
My name is Michael.
I'm Greg.
Andrew.
I'm Brian.
Jay.
I'm Zeb.
Don.
Jack.
Richard. My name is Jerry.
No.
Richard.
Stephen.
I'm Clint.
My name is Oswaldo.
Matthew.
Larry.
My name is Ray.
Michael.
Jeff.
My name is Cass.
Robert.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, my name is Kay.
Robert.
Stuart.
My name is Henry.
Jason.
My name is Tom.
Jim.
Amir.
My name is Ivan.
Daniel.
Bob.
I'm Hal.
Jim.
Tim.
Risha.
David.
And Jeffrey.
Howard.
Dennis.
My apologies, the thing was kind of all Okay, so it's my great pleasure to introduce our wonderful Sangha member, David Lewis, who has a new bio that I get to read for the first time. It's really good, too. Okay, so David Lewis has a degree in comparative religious studies and has been a practicing Buddhist for 45 years. He enjoys sharing the Dharma with anyone who is interested.
I don't know if you remember, it used to be really and there's this concept that the Buddha talked about called bhava. Bhava is the Pali word for becoming. And the Buddha said, avoid becoming. It means becoming an important person or becoming an experienced teacher or becoming, you know. So our bios tend to be bhava. It's like, so it's a great relief to me to be less important than I used to be.
Me too.
So this morning, I was taking my dog on our customary 6 a.m. Walk, which we do pretty much every morning, and I was just noticed this wonderful sense of well-being and pleasant sensation and gratitude. And as I was walking my dog, I just cultivated that. Right effort, which is one of the steps on the Eightfold Path, the Buddha said that if you're in a state of gratitude or well-being, you should cultivate that. Not only just appreciate it, but pump it up a little bit. And likewise, if you're in an aversive state or angry or worrying, that you should work on deconditioning that. So I just started thinking of all the things that I was grateful for as I was taking my walk this morning. And by the time I got home, I had just decided to scuttle the talk that I was going to give today, and that I've been kind of practicing for a month, and talk about gratitude. So my past 3 hours have been a mild frenzy of pulling together quotes and poems and coming up with a new talk. But I'm really happy about it. I'm really happy to be here. I'm so grateful for the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, which we take refuge in this tradition. I'm grateful here to be with my Sangha. So last week, I just wanted to acknowledge, I was here last week for Larry Robinson's talk, really wonderful talk. And one of the things he said really caused me to reflect during the past week. He was talking about at the beginning of his talk, he was talking about what difficult times we live in. And mentioned at some point that, in his words, our national problem is maybe not politics, but a lack of spirituality. So I've been reflecting on that and letting it percolate, and I think in many ways that's true. One of the things I've been noticing reading the news is that there's a lot of discontent on all parts of the political spectrum and social spectrum in our culture. Mostly, that's what we've been hearing about. When I sit down and have tea with my friends, I hear discontent. That's dukkha. That's the noble truth of dukkha. When you read the news, you know that we have an opioid epidemic. We have an epidemic of addiction in our culture. Suicide is also up, as are gun deaths. It's a lot of dukkha, a lot of pain in our culture. And I think Larry was on to something by pointing out that, you know, maybe it's not just politics that's the problem, but maybe there's people are feeling a void in their lives, something missing, something that's not being fulfilled. So spiritual practice, Buddhist practice for me, has something to offer. And Buddhist practice is, the Buddhist tradition is really a collection of practices. And one of those practices that's an antidote to dukkha, an antidote to greed and craving and aversion, is gratitude, the practice of gratitude. So this is Thanksgiving month, and it's an appropriate time to talk about gratitude. So our spiritual practice doesn't necessarily have something specific to offer for social ills or political problems, but it can help in steadying the mind and opening the heart so that we have the tools we need to navigate these difficult waters. It's not to say you shouldn't go out there and be a samurai in the political sphere or the social sphere, but the samurais were meditators. They calmed the mind before they went into battle. The great Tibetan teacher, Yongi Mingyur Rinpoche, did a 4-year silent retreat, 4 years living in a cave and not talking to anybody. And when he came out of his retreat, he was asked what wisdom he had to offer. What did he learn sitting in his cave for 4 years? And this was his answer. I feel that happiness is really found in appreciation and rejoicing. Everything is a display of clarity, love, and wisdom. This is related to the main view of Vajrayana Buddhism, that we are all Buddha. This enlightened nature is not just within you. It's everywhere. You can see it and appreciate it. That's the main cause of happiness, gratitude and appreciation. So that's what he had to say after 4 years of sitting in silence. So gratitude is an antidote to clinging and craving in life. And clinging and craving, you may remember, are the second noble truth, the cause of suffering, clinging and craving. Wanting things to be other than they are. Or wanting things to be fixed. Gratitude is an antidote to that. The short quote from a Buddhist nun, Ayakama: the first thing to let go of is trying to get love and instead give it. That's the secret of the spiritual path. If you want more love in your life, give it. Don't go looking for it. There is a Pali word for gratitude, Pali being the language of the Buddha's time, and that's katanuta. Katanuta. Interestingly enough, it doesn't show up a lot in the suttas. The Buddha didn't talk a lot directly about gratitude in the same way that we do, as we understand it. But he repeatedly emphasized the importance of accepting the present moment and ourselves just as we are. So I think it's the same thing. Buddha talked about accepting the present moment, whatever's going on, as it is, accepting ourselves with all our faults, with all our warts, as we are. And that's the same thing as gratitude, acceptance and gratitude. Mary Oliver poem called Mindful. Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in a haystack of light. It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but of the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these? The untrimmable light of the world, the ocean shine, the prayers that are made out of grass. Rilke said, often mistaken for Buddha's teacher, Rilke said, let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. So Rilke is pointing out the Buddhist wisdom of being grateful for every experience in life, including death, every experience in life, no matter what it is. Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. So gratitude is, again, acceptance with appreciation, acceptance plus appreciation. And that adds up to equanimity. Equanimity being the culmination of the higher states of mind in Buddhism. Equanimity is considered to be a higher happiness than happiness, because equanimity can be maintained continuously in our lives. Happiness comes and goes. Equanimity or peace are available in any moment of our lives. Any moment. When we're riding on beauty, or laying in a hospital bed, or sitting at the bedside of a friend that's ill, peace is available to us. It's always there. Peace is available in gratitude. We simply need to shift our perspective to, rather than what's the problem in this moment, to what am I grateful in this moment. My favorite teacher in gratitude, and by the way, if I haven't said it yet, gratitude is one of my favorite practices. It's very dear to me, gratitude practice. And one of my favorite teachers is Brother David Stendel Rost, who's a Christian monk, Catholic monk, wrote this wonderful book a number of years ago called Gratefulness, the Heart of Prayer, which I highly recommend to you. And if you don't want to read the book, or if you're not a reader, he gave a TED Talk, which is one of the best TED Talks I've ever given about gratitude. So I think if you go to TED and simply the TED site and type in gratitude, you'll probably get this talk. It's one of their most popular talks. And I met the guy once. He's quite a remarkable man, and very interested in meditation and Buddhism, across religion practices. He meditates. So Brother David Stendel Rost's core message about gratitude is that we have a delusion in our culture that we'll be grateful when we get everything we want. We'll be grateful when we're happy. We'll be grateful when all of our ducks are lined up in a row. Then we'll be grateful. So we wait for gratitude. We wait for it to happen to us when everything gets organized. And Brother David says that's an illusion. It's exactly the other way around. That happiness is the result of gratitude. Happiness is the outcome of gratitude. So if you want to be happy, try practicing gratitude. Try cultivating gratitude. if you're fortunate, no matter what's going on in your life, you might experience equanimity, what we call it in Buddhism. And the Greek word is eudaimonia, a contented state of being, happy, healthy, equanimous. Another Buddhist word for that is sukha. Sukha being usually gets translated as happy, but I prefer being translated as well-being. Sukha is the opposite of dukkha. Sukha and dukkha. Gratitude can turn a meal into a feast, a house into a home, a stranger into a friend. It makes sense of our past, brings peace for today, and creates a vision for tomorrow. It's a quote from Melody Beatty. Gratitude invites the opening of a heart, an inclination towards compassion and generosity. Gratitude is the heart of chaga. And chaga is the Pali word for the impulse to give, the impulse to be generous. Gratitude encourages the impulse to be generous, chaga, and the act of being generous is dana. So we hear about dana every week in Sangha. We talk about dana as, you know, that which we contribute to support the Sangha and support our teachers and support being able to, supporting this space. But dana is really so much more. Dana is another act of happiness. The Buddha taught dana practice to lay practitioners, the non-monastic community, before he taught meditation. He said, if you want a quick fix of happiness in your life without doing a whole lot of work, be generous. Be grateful. Gratitude leads to generosity. Gratitude is an antidote. Another way of putting that, gratitude is an antidote to greed, which is a rather fundamental thing in our culture, which is a consumerist culture. I think we hear less about gratitude in our consumer culture than people in other cultures that are not as consumerist as us. So gratitude is the impulse, amongst other things, the impulse towards chaga, the impulse to give, and dana, the act of giving. So that's one practice that you can do to cultivate gratitude, is dana. And I encourage you, when you do dana, I'll even take it outside of the context of supporting your sangha, when you think about sharing a meal with a friend, or think about giving something to a homeless person that you pass on the street, or giving your seat up on the bus to someone that needs to sit more than you. That's an act of generosity. And stop for a minute and think about how that feels in your heart, in your body, in your mind. And just appreciating it, how it feels, is the cultivation. It's okay to feel good about being generous and kind and compassionate. The Buddha said, cultivate that. So dana is one gratitude practice. There's a bunch of others, and I'll name a few or suggest a few. I encourage you to try maybe one of them if you're so inclined. About, 8 or 10 years ago, a Dharma friend of mine and I decided that we wanted to do gratitude practice together. And so what we decided to do was, at that time it was emails before I was texting. At that time we sent an email to each other once a day, noting whatever we were grateful for. whoever sent the first email kind of reminded the other person to respond. So you can do this with text. It's really a wonderful thing to do with a friend. And it doesn't have to be the big stuff, like I'm grateful for living in a democracy, or I'm grateful for my health. It can be I'm grateful for the persimmon that I had for breakfast this morning. I'm grateful for the changing leaves in the fall. Be very small things, short sentence. It's a really nice practice. I commend it. Gratitude, as Brother David suggests, gratefulness is the heart of prayer. But gratitude can be like a prayer. And there is a Zen meal gata. Gata being in Zen, like a prayer or a chant. That I offered at Thanksgiving dinner last year. And this is it. We receive this food in gratitude from all beings who help to bring it to our table, and vow to respond in turn to those in need with wisdom and compassion. We receive this food in gratitude from all beings who help to bring it to our table, and vow to respond in turn to those in need with wisdom and compassion. I know people that offer that prayer or something like it with every meal that they partake of, whether they're with other people or not. Regina Sarah Ryan says, the gratitude can be a concentration practice. This is not something you usually think about in meditation. Concentration practice is a meditation practice. But she points out, the gratitude is so close to the bone of life, pure and true, that it instantly stops the rational mind and all of its planning and plotting. So if you want to get out of your head, your busy thinking head, if you want to get away from papancha, discursive thought, gratitude's a good practice for that as well. It's an antidote to thinking too much. I'm going to read that sentence again from Sarah Ryan. Gratitude is so close to the bone of life, pure and true, that it instantly stops the rational mind and all its planning and plotting. Who's not for that? Another good place, another practice of gratitude, and another good place to start is the body. As many of you know, in the Satipatthana Sutta, where the Buddha lists the four foundations of mindfulness, the four things, four areas where it's skillful to place our mindfulness, place our attention, the first foundation of mindfulness is the body. This is, to the surprise of many beginners in Buddhism, this is a very body-based practice. So, likewise, with mindfulness, gratitude can be a body-based practice. It's a quote from another Tibetan teacher, Tsongkhapa. The human body, at peace with itself, is more precious than the rarest gem. Cherish your body. It is yours this one time only. The human form is won with great difficulty. It is easy to lose. All worldly things are brief, like lightning in the sky. This life you must know as the tiny splash of a raindrop, a thing of beauty that disappears even as it comes into being. Therefore, set your goal. Make use of every day and night to achieve it. Be grateful for this body and life. So We've talked before about the Brahmavi harvest, the divine abodes, the higher mind states in Buddhism, and I know you've heard a lot of talks about them. Loving kindness is the first, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity are the divine abodes. And there are also practices in the Buddhist tradition. We can practice loving kindness. We can practice compassion. We can practice sympathetic joy. And in the Theravada tradition, there's each one of these divine abodes has a practice associated with it, and the practices are a series of phrases that you could say to cultivate that divine abode. So most of you probably, I would guess, that have done any of these practices, have probably done the metta practice. May I be filled with loving kindness. These are the phrases suggest. May I be safe from danger and harm. May I be healthy in body and mind. And we turn those phrases towards other people. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be safe from danger and harm. May you be healthy in body and mind. So each one of the divine abodes, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, has a set of phrases. Or you can make up your own. So a couple of teachers have come up with phrases for gratitude, even though it's not one of the divine abodes, come up with a set of phrases for people that might choose to practice gratitude in this way, by using phrases, kind of like a chant. Joan Halifax is a Zen teacher, and these are some of her suggestions. Just let it sink in. I'm grateful for this precious life. I'm grateful for this old and beautiful earth. I'm grateful for the holy gift of spiritual friendship. I'm grateful that I have a heart to serve. I'm grateful for the silence and stillness that bring us together. I'm grateful for those hard lessons learned. I'm grateful for every given day. I'm grateful for you. And there's an alternative set of phrases. I offer my gratitude for the safety and well-being for all that I have been given. I offer my gratitude for the blessings of this earth that I have been given. I offer my gratitude for the measure of health that I have been given. I offer my gratitude for the family and friends that I have been given. I offer my gratitude for the life that I have been given. Michelle McDonald, current contemporary Buddhist teacher in Canada, says, when we understand how precious each moment is, we can treat each breath, each moment, as a newborn baby. So it's another suggested practice. If you're inclined towards meditative practice, and particularly if you do breath practice, what the Buddha called anapanasati, sitting with your breath, becoming so intimate with your breath, and so grateful for each breath and each moment, we treat it as if it was a newborn baby. It's exactly the opposite of taking our breath for granted. It's treating it as if it was a newborn baby. It's a wonderful meditation practice. I've been playing with it. It works. A couple of quotes. I'm starting to wind down from folks in our community who are not Buddhists, but they're Dharma masters. The first being Walt Whitman. To me, every hour of the day and night is an unspeakably perfect miracle. And if you've read Walt Whitman's poetry, that's pretty much, that's the message throughout. Every hour of the day and night is an unspeakably perfect miracle. And Oliver Sacks died this past year, and I'm a big fan of. Oliver Sacks says, I have been a sentient being, a knowing human. I have been a sentient being, a thinking animal on this beautiful planet. And that in itself has been an enormous privilege and adventure. Oliver Sacks said that as he was dying. Knew that he was checking out. I have been a sentient being, a thinking animal on this beautiful planet, and that in itself has been an enormous privilege and adventure. So, if nothing else, be grateful for your time on this planet, your time in this life. Whether you're in a good place or a difficult place, whether you're happy with your lot in life now or struggling, you can still be grateful simply for being here. That's an important practice in Buddhism. First and foremost, being grateful for this human incarnation. There's a quote that I didn't bring that I wish I had Larry Robinson's ability to recite from mind. There's a quote in Buddhism that there's nothing more precious than this human life. It's the greatest gift that we've received. Or could possibly receive. We should be grateful for it every day. So, before opening up to discussion and your thoughts, and one final poem, not a very long one, by Wendell Berry, called The Wild Geese. Seems like it's a gratitude poem to me. Horseback on Sunday morning, harvest over, we taste persimmon and wild grape, sharp, sweet, of summer's end. In time's maze over falls, fields, we name names that went west from here, names that rest on graves. We open a persimmon seed to find the tree that stands in the promise, pale in the seed's marrow. Geese appear high over us, pass, and the sky closes. Abandon, as in lover sleep, holds them to their way, clear in the ancient faith, what we need is here. And we pray not for new earth or heaven, but to be quiet in heart and an eye clear. What we need is here. So, with that, I thank you for your kind attention and putting up with me changing my Dharma talk at the last minute. I hope that it triggers some gratitude in your own life, and that may be an antidote to some of the difficulties of our times, if only temporarily. So I open it up to the wisdom of the Sangha. Do you have questions or reflections or maybe something you're grateful for that you didn't think of until you walked into Sangha this morning? Please feel free to share.
Thank you, David, for good reminders. You know, it occurred to me when you were talking about how gratitude creates happiness instead of the other way around. You know, if we look at what comes out of quantum physics, they talk about intention actually causes things to, you know, manifest and come into being. And that's the same thing, where being grateful can generate the happiness. So it's actually, you know, two sides of the same coin, but spoken thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting.
Yeah. It is exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
The Buddha used that metaphor of cultivation quite a lot in his teaching. He's talked about planting a seed. And planting a seed doesn't always guarantee that whatever you plant is going to grow. But you do your best, you water it, you hope for good weather, and maybe it'll sprout, maybe it won't. We can't guarantee the future. But the intention, the planting of the seed, is what matters. Because it's not going to happen if you don't. So it does. All of karma starts with intention, karma being action. So thanks for that reminder. Jerry.
Thanks, David. There was a quote, I think it was in the beginning, and I'm just going to paraphrase it, and being grateful for the things that you don't feel good if they're happening to you, the negative things. Because I think in our society we're taught to be addicted to feeling good all the time.
Yeah.
So being grateful for, I don't know, sickness, or you want to speak more to that? No, I mean, just...
Yeah, well, it's all part of being human. So if we're truly grateful for being human, we have to include old age, illness, and death in that gratitude. One of the things, it's not so much related to this talk, but something that an insight that has arose for me in the last few weeks around my Buddhist practice is the universality of suffering. The Buddha talked about that. That's why dukkha, suffering, discontent, is the first noble truth. It's because it's universal. Everybody's got it. It doesn't mean we're all miserable all the time. It just means that a good deal of our lives and our thinking and our response to the world is in reaction to not liking things the way they are. We want to cultivate more of the good stuff, and we want to push away the bad stuff, and we want to get all our ducks in a row and organized so that we can sit back and rest easy and be grateful, but that never works that way. The ducks, you know, can't be herded. So, instead of talking about being grateful for the difficulties in our life, we can talk about that other phrase that I used, which is acceptance. That, okay, shit happens, and hopefully it's temporary, but part of being human is accepting the difficulties of life with equanimity. Is that helpful?
Yeah, actually something came to me. I was 28 and I was living in Denver, and I got fired from my job, and my ego just went crazy and I just felt terrible. But what happened was I moved here. So sometimes, you know, something negative happens.
Yeah.
It's like kind of the environment. So,
And if you think about it, everybody in this room has that story, because we're all here for some reason, for some chain of reasons, some, you know, complicated, but that's past karma. Whatever brought us to this point in time, whatever brought us into this room.
Suffering.
not necessarily universally, but it's true, more often than not, if you take a poll in any given Buddhist group, why have you come to spiritual practice? It's usually suffering. Because if everything's hunky-dory, why bother? That's Waldo.
And so grateful that you changed your topic and picked this one, because the circumstances fit me to a T for this week. And this past week, my very carefully laid plans to move to Santa Fe, that has been going on for years, at the last minute, is, you know, they're still on, but a monkey wrench was thrown into it by a failure to read paragraph 34 of the contract kind of thing. But that came together with a friend being diagnosed with thyroid cancer, another friend that had a back operation still being completely out of it. And I'm not able to talk to him. He's in Colorado because they're taking all these opioids and worried about him becoming one of the next victims of that one. My husband being down in the dumps with this awful change of plans, and being in the horns of a dilemma whether I should re-up for one more semester when I thought I would be retired in 5 weeks' time. All on top of the massacre in that Texas church. So the people that I would normally pick up the phone and get reassurance from or talk to at the moment are not able to reciprocate and to give me that. So thank you for giving me that. And yes, absolutely, I'm grateful for a ton of things, including one of the most important being the Sangha.
Yeah. So. Well, that you just described the universality of dukkha. One of my teachers, Joseph Goldstein, his motto is, anything can happen anytime. And he truly reflects on that every single day. Anything can happen anytime. It's just if you think, you think it's all organized and you know how it's going to happen and you know what's in your future, stop thinking that. Because it may be wrong.
But there's this interesting observation that I've made, and many times they tend to come in clusters. You know, there are periods when things are
seems
whatever
like
they are, and other periods when it all seems to happen at once. Yeah, this happened to me several times in my life.
Well, may it be temporary.
It's an interesting, observation of the randomness and the chaotic nature of existence.
Yeah, it just kind of takes the breath away, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
Hal?
Thank you. I have gratitude in my heart now. But one of my favorite teachers was a son of San Francisco, the poet James Broughton, who often said, it's not a predicament, it's an adventure. And that has carried me through a lot of experience.
Hal, say that again.
It's not a predicament, it's an adventure.
Oh, yeah.
You might know that my understanding is that the Chinese character for disaster or for catastrophe is the same as opportunity. So you never know. Jack?
I wanted to make a connection between suffering and gratitude that your talk crystallized for me. But I want to preface it by saying I feel unaccountably in this stage of my life that I have so few issues, so few problems, that all my problems are luxuries. I thought that for a dozen years or more. But I've had wrenching times in my life which felt like real suffering. I wasn't worried about what was going to be on the plate for dinner that night, but psychological, social problems. And I'm grateful for them now because one of the hard lessons to learn about suffering is that's when you pay attention. That's when you're slapped into awareness of what's happening. It's very vivid. I mean, I'm grateful for it in retrospect.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for what's happening. I can't be that mature. I'm grateful for suffering in a way. So that's what spurred me from Jerry's.
Or maybe you're grateful for the wisdom that's arisen out of suffering.
Yeah. But it tends to come up when you're suffering.
No. That's my experience as well.
Thank you, David. I'm thinking about the spiritual impoverishment that you were talking about, and I don't know if it's the chicken or the egg, but it does seem like our political system is linked to our spiritual impoverishment in the sense that illusion that we have to get things to be happy or we have to get love from outside of ourselves is kind of what fuels the whole capitalist thing.
Yeah.
That we have to feel deficient about ourselves in order to want to buy things, which kind of fuels the whole political system. So I'm not sure I have a question, but just it, like how to be in this society and not be of it in a way, to practice all these things and create our own world, loving world, and our own sangha in the midst of something that doesn't really reflect us entirely.
Yeah, well, that's the Buddha's teaching. The Buddha taught us how to respond to suffering, how to respond to the fact that life's difficult. And that's his whole teaching. And I think we're not doing it so skillfully in our culture. I've spent way more time in the last year personally being angry than I think I ever have in any other year. And it's been fairly unpleasant. Reading the headlines, reading the news. And, my Buddhist teacher reminded me that for him, his perspective, for me, anger often arises, what's underneath it is sadness sadness. My Buddhist teacher said he thinks that anger more often than not results from either not getting what you want or wounded pride. And so when I'm reading the headlines or talking to friends about the news or politics, I kind of check in about, when I find myself getting angry about it, I think, okay, is this wounded pride? People aren't behaving the way I think they ought to behave. Or is this not getting what I want? And I think a lot of us feel like we're not getting what we want, or that the world's not behaving the way we think it ought to be. And that's creating a lot of discontent in our lives. And I think I'm not alone in this. So many of my conversations with my friends are about distress. Not even necessarily our personal lives, but our culture and our society and things in the news and politics. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to offer this topic today, is it's an antidote. Gratitude is an antidote to that distress. As is loving kindness and compassion. They're also antidotes. So the Buddha offered us a lot of tools for dealing with difficulty. And he took difficulty as a given in human life. When we have difficulties in our lives, we tend to think, oh, this is an aberration in my own personal life. It's universal. And recognizing that allows us to be, allows compassion to arise for others. Compassion being with suffering, understanding others' suffering and being able to empathize with it. Thank you. Grisha.
Thank you for your talk. And in the reminder that it's a practice, it's among the other practices in this practice. I often will say that gratitude, it doesn't come naturally to me, but the way I grew up and the kind of personality I have, it's I'm a little more gloom and doomy. But the more I remember to practice it, the better I feel. And so thank you for the reminder. And I was thinking about, how can you be grateful for the suffering? And the answer for me is that it opens your heart up. It rips your heart open so that you can feel more deeply and empathize more deeply, like you just said. And in my own experience, it's through suffering that I feel the deepest joy. It's like the farther I get from the deepest suffering, the deeper my joy becomes. And my recent experience, I'm just thinking about last year, I'm a teacher and I had a really difficult year with my students. And I ended up having to go on anti-anxiety medication and therapy. And it's like a really intense 18 months. I was in a car crash. There's all these things that happen, people dying. And this year, it's 180 degrees different. Like I love my kids so much this year. I'm so content, I'm so happy, I'm so lighthearted. And I don't know if I'd be this feeling this if I hadn't felt that last year. So I can appreciate that. And in the weirdest ways, like listening to StoryCorps and NPR, like it's always the stories where someone has been through absolute hell and they're out now that bring me to tears. And I just think if like everybody was bouncing around in bliss, it just would be the same experience. One of my practices in the morning is to read a few different teachers, and one is Mark Nepo, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he wrote a book. This book that he wrote of daily meditations was inspired by his journey through cancer and basically, you know, almost dying or actually dying and being brought back. But and so this beautiful book came out of that, and it's like only by dying like that could he give this beautiful thing. He was inspired to do it. And today, Pema Chodron's what I read from her was, there isn't any hell or heaven except for how we relate to our world. Hell is just resistance to life. So if I don't resist the suffering, I don't resist the joy. Then,
well said. That's beautiful. And yes, it's suffering opens the heart. It might not feel good in the moment, but opening the heart is always a beneficial thing.
I think one of the things that is helping me understand that a crisis is and suffering is that it's my best teacher. And as I look back in my life, the hardest times have been the times that have been the most important teachers of insight into me, and exposing the things that I'm most attached to. Those attachments are directly linked to the greatest degree of suffering in my life. And here comes this teacher who is not very kind, not very nice, not many smiles, but directly focused on truth telling and manifesting in my own life, you know, where the hard places are. So it's when hard times come and suffering comes, one of the first places I go is, oh, here comes the teacher. Mm-hmm. And I can feel good about teachers. And I feel good about the teachers who have been the toughest on me in my life. Because I've grown the most through those kinds of instructions. So we had a really good close friend of ours, a closeted lesbian woman who was coming out. And Jeffrey and I were with her, and she was crying, and she's looking at divorce, and she's going to lose her house, and she had no income, and she just had this long list of her life was basically coming to an end. And we put our hands on her and we loved her, and the first thing out of my mouth was, I'm so excited for you. And, you know, it just stopped her in her tracks. She stopped crying and she said, what the hell? It's a great teacher has come into your life. And you are going to learn and grow. And the transformations that are just eager to be manifest in your life, they're going to start. The teacher is demanding it, that you will follow. So I'm grateful for the hard teachers in my life.
I remember being in her shoes. I imagine a few of us do. It's that acceptance element, though. It's that acceptance of, you know, whatever comes her way is a more powerful teacher than hiding from it, turning away, which is what we do reactively, automatically. It's turning away from discomfort. It just gives it power. Thank you for that wisdom, Howard.
I want to thank you for getting me to think about gratitude, because I really don't think about it very often. And I was wondering, as you were talking, when I do feel gratitude, is it for the moment? with the long-term context of that moment. And I've come to realize the answer is yes.
Sorry, what was the last?
I've come to realize the answer is yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think the Buddha would agree with you. The context of the moment are the same thing. But we don't always appreciate the moment. We tend to think of the past or in the future, but everything's okay in the moment. I used to, maybe we're ending with this, but I used to lead a meditation group at the Zen Hospice Project for people that were dying, people that were in the hospice, and also people that had life-threatening diseases. This was at the height of the AIDS epidemic. And one of the great lessons that I learned, we had a guest teacher. I think most of you know Eugene Cash. Eugene Cash came and led our group one day, offered to lead our group. And everybody had a lot going wrong in their lives in that group. Most of them had severe health problems. If not, they were dying. And Eugene said, reflect on using just your five senses, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, reflect on what's wrong in the moment, using only your five senses. So we had a whole room full of people that were sick and dying, and everybody agreed that in that using their five senses in that moment, nothing was wrong. So that's another great practice. But when you're thinking too much about what's wrong with your life or what's wrong with the world, using only, because your five senses are the only reality that you've got. It's the only thing that's real. Everything else is thinking. What exactly is wrong in this moment? The chances are, it's nothing. And that's something we can be grateful for. Thank you again for kind attention. And
thank you, David.
Lovely time with you.
Thank you for your time. Let's see, a couple of announcements. Our speaker next week is David Rico, who's a psychologist, a teacher, and yada, yada, yada. He wrote a book called How to Be an Adult in Relationships. So he'll be there next week. Speaking of gratitude, Donna Bowl will be passed around today, which, of course, is makes up for our rent, our newsletters, our speakers. The suggested donation is $10, but whatever you can give, we always appreciate that. Our host today, I think, is Mark.
Yes. Yes, welcome, everyone. There's a few things on the table out there. And there's a sign-up sheet on the credenza. People want to get on the email list and that sort of thing. I will be walking around the Donna Bowl. Some of us meet at 12:30 to go out for lunch at the door, near the door. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Are there any other announcements?
Yes.
Oh, please.
On Thanksgiving Day, there will be an annual GBF potluck to celebrate the day, and everybody's welcome. The half starts at 5 o'clock in the evening at my place in East Bay, El Cerrito. And if you're interested in coming, please pick up a flyer, which will be out there, and let me know so that we can pass coordinate districts. And if you have any questions, please let me know. I'm hanging around during the social hour.
Thank you. Once again, Jeffrey and Howard, welcome back. And Daniel, welcome. Please hope you can stay for the social hour. Okay, let's go ahead and stand for the dedication.
By the power and truth of this practice, may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness which is without sorrow. And may all live in equanimity without too much attachment or too much aversion, believing in the equality of all that lives.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.